On today's show, shutdown averted? Well, not so fast, but we do have some breaking news out of Congress this morning. We'll show you where things stand from Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer speaking just moments ago with reporters. We'll bring you that. Plus, stimulus collapse. Looking more and more likely, folks. Looking more and more likely we could have a stimulus collapse. President Biden's $3.5 trillion stimulus is looking dead in the water. Can it be saved? Which two senators do you think we can blame for this mess? See if you can guess. Just throw it in the chat below to see if you have any idea which two senators need to be primaried, kicked out. Those corrupt politicians. And prescription drugs. A new report out this morning shows which country pays more than any other country for prescription drugs. Can you name that country? See if you can. It's time to get uncomfortable. Morning Invest starts right now. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome into Morning Invest. I'm Clayton Morris. So glad to have you here on the show. We've got a jam-packed show for you this morning. David is in the control booth running the show on the production side. Good to have you, my friend. What is that called? Is that called like a memory? What is that? Anybody know in the chat when you do that kind of thing? Like, what is that called? Like a memory?
Yeah, it's kind of the equivalent of like a song or whatever that you remember. I can't remember what the actual name is, but yeah. But I like physical comedy. I like, you know.
Physical comedy. You're like a Carrot Top.
Yeah, I'm like a Carrot Top. Like Gallagher. Like Gallagher was.
Gallagher. Who would ever pay to go to a Gallagher show? I mean. When you think of, like, you know, comedians like Norm Macdonald, my favorite comedian of all time, who just passed away, you know, like that's a comedian, a pure comedian. And then you've got people like Gallagher who'd smash watermelons and people pay to go sit there. I mean,
A kid, I loved that. But yeah,
I loved making fun of it as a kid. I was like, who?
Jim Carrey is another good physical comedian.
Yeah, now I would give you that physicality. I can appreciate the physicality comedian part, but he's funny, you know. And he would actually tell jokes and do stuff. But yeah.
You know what? I watched the other day, I stumbled upon stand-up by Michael Keaton. I didn't realize he was a stand-up comic. He is freaking hilarious.
I didn't realize that either. Really? I think I saw a headline, like something about Michael Keaton doing stand-up. And I didn't want to watch it because I thought it might ruin my opinion of him. Because I used to do stand-up. I love stand-up comedy. I love stand-up comics. I used to hang around nightclubs and do stand up, and you know, so I know that culture pretty well. And I think I was like, oh, I love Michael Keaton, and I was worried, and that's why I didn't watch it.
Yeah, no, I was blown away by how good he was, and he's basically is the Mr. Mom character. Like who he played in Mr. Mom is who he is in real life because he was just like that guy.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was so good. Yeah,
I've seen him on he was on with Norm Macdonald on the Norm Macdonald show. They were pretty funny together. So like. There you go. Surprising. Apparently, there's a little known fact that when he was playing the Vulture in the first Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland, and he was in the Vulture gear and they were having their fight scenes, like in order to like try to throw Tom Holland off, he would hold him like during like breaks in the shot and he would go, "I'm Batman." Which is pretty funny. Because he is. Funny. He's my Batman.
Yeah. Oh, he's my favorite.
All right, we got to get to the news this morning, shall we? So let's talk about the big story of the day, which is government shutdown day. Happy Thursday. It is September 30th. The federal government is going to run out of money at midnight tonight, but Congress is on a path to try to avert a shutdown for at least another 2 months. So kicking the can down till December. We'll get to that breaking news in just a moment.
Oh, it's right around Christmas.
Yeah, just in time for Christmas. I don't know why they do this to themselves because they love to take the month of December off for the holidays, and then they end up like running up until like Christmas Eve on another debt ceiling or another government shutdown vote that they have to get.
To be fair, they're not doing it to themselves; they're doing it to us.
Mm-hmm. True, but they like to be out of town, and they have to be stuck in town dealing with this stuff. So you'd think that they would plan their vacations a little bit better. It's also today is Infrastructure Day. The day on which the House is scheduled to take up the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill, the Roads and Bridges bill. This is huge for President Joe Biden, for Speaker Pelosi, Chuck Schumer. They're going to face some huge political choices over the next few hours. Nancy Pelosi was quoted as saying last night, I think she said, how are things going? She said, we're taking it hour by hour. So right now, things are going to either anger either the moderates or the progressive wing of the party, or even both. It's all up in the air right now. Let's, though, start with the government shutdown, because this is the big story of the day. Today is going to be a bit of a drag. One of these, it's going to be one of these kinds of days, something like always goes wrong or it takes longer than expected. You know, if you follow Washington for any length of time, it's one of those days. So deep breaths, everyone. We're going to get through this. We'll figure this out. We'll see what happens. But today is going to be a very fluid day. Chuck Schumer has scheduled 5 votes beginning at 10:30 a.m. this morning. So in just a little over an hour from now, Chuck Schumer is going to start this voting process. This is the start of a process to try to avert a government shutdown. Congressional leaders and the White House have agreed to a verbal stopgap spending bill that will fund federal agencies through December 3rd. There's tens of billions of dollars in additional money for disaster relief, as well as aid for the wave of Afghan refugees evacuated during the U.S. withdrawal. By the way, just on that piece, they're putting about $6 billion just to handle the Afghan refugee crisis, which I'm all for, right? We screwed up their country for 20 years. We should take care of these people. Okay, yes, I'm all for that. But haven't we already spent enough money? And isn't there already enough money sitting in a defense budget somewhere that we could reallocate to help take care of our war footprint? Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, why don't we just pull it out of the Israeli fund? Because they don't need it.
Right. Instead of the money, yeah, the $20 billion, $40 billion that we send to Israel, the richest industrialized countries in the world.
Who has Medicare for All, by the way. Mm-hmm.
And an Iron Dome that does not need any additional funding of, you know, defense spending. Richest country, one of the richest countries in the world. But they need our money. They need our money. So anyway, I'm just throwing that out there. We need an additional $6 billion that you're going to spend.
Well, then here's the thing. I feel for those people as well. I really do, because we did mess them up. We did. That's what we did. But we still haven't recovered in this country. We can't get an ounce of help. Yet they talk about this stuff, and this stuff doesn't get filibustered and kicked the can down the road when it's this kind of stuff. They get the money almost immediately, while we still sit here and try to fight for scraps. Like our money is going to help other countries more than it helps our own.
I agree, but what do we do to these people? You know, like these, we destroyed their country. Now the Taliban has taken over. We knew that this was going to happen. 4 presidents, you know, basically dropped the ball on this.
Right, but at what point do you actually sit there and be like, look, we don't have the money. Like, okay, yeah, we can help them, but let's just print $6 billion.
Let's stop kidding ourselves. So we have the money. Right. Whoa, that's the right thing. It's like, we have the money. It's just they continue to waste it on war and other meaningless garbage. Like, I would be, so I agree with you. I would go along with, hey, we're going to spend $6 billion helping these Afghan refugees, but we're going to take it from this area. We're also going to cut the fat in this area. We're going to reduce our war budget, and we're going to pull some of that money. Then there wouldn't be a problem. Then you wouldn't have a problem with this, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think what they should do is, like, any money that's allocated overseas, that should be reciprocated and allocated here. So it's like, okay, we'll give you a $750 billion war budget, but then we want a $750 UBI budget here for some U.S. citizens.
Oh, right. Something on parallel, right? Yeah. It's never going to happen. So you
No, it'll never happen. But
you can go back to smoke and crack or whatever
you're
saying.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I would love, hey, this is the new rule in Washington. We're going to spend $750 billion a year on war. We have to equal that. There has to be like a company matching program so that we have to also spend $750 billion on Americans to make sure that we have prescription drug costs that are really, really cheap, and Medicare for All, and elder care, and great education where our kids aren't eating. Did you see that story last week out of New Jersey where these kids are eating like old food for lunches in their school? Like these, like, jeez. It was ridiculous. And we showed our kids. We're like, my God, we're not in New Jersey right now. These are public school lunches. Like, this is what kids are eating. It's like old food. It's like food that had been sitting in a refrigerator, and this is what they're routinely being served. Like, come on, man. This is America?
Anyway. Well, I'll tell you what. That'd be one good way to get the budget cut, the military budget cut. As soon as they found out we were going to get like matched, they'd be like, "Oh, we can't give them that much." So,
right? No, we go back on what we were going to say. We were going to help Americans. Okay, we'll take $100 billion. We won't take as much this time. So here's Senator Chuck Schumer on the floor talking about this breakneck issue right at the last minute, up to the last minute government shutdown. Let's listen.
Keeping the government open and preventing a default is vital to our country's future, and we'll be taking further action to prevent this from happening this week.
Okay, great. So what does that mean? Senate Republicans, though, I mean, if we can get this vote this afternoon, 10:30, we've got about an hour until he starts to put up a series of these votes. There's going to be a couple of things that Republicans are going to try to shoehorn in here, but there's likely to be bipartisan support. They need 60 votes on all of this. But meanwhile, Senate Republicans are still playing a game of chicken with a government shutdown and a possible default on federal debt. That continues today. If the stopgap funding bill isn't passed by the end of today, the government will shut down. And Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned Congress yesterday that if the federal debt limit isn't increased, the government will be all out of money to pay its bills on October 18th. So we just had Monday. You know, Monday, the Senate Republicans blocked a bill that would have averted both crises. And then again, yesterday, they also blocked it. So Republicans are really helpful right now.
Wait a minute. We're going to run out of money to fund everything.
Mm-hmm.
Then how are we going to fund $6 billion for Afghanistan refugees?
Well, that's what part of this negotiation is today. That's what these funding bills are set up today, the stopgap measure to keep it open for 3 more months.
How much are we getting then? So that sounds like they're going to work on that money.
You won't get anything, but
the American
refugees
people
will get. No. It's just going to be to keep government agencies open. So if you want to get your, you know, you want to get, you want to go to a national park, or you want to get, you know, I don't know, Veterans Affairs offices open or anything like that. So that stuff will remain open during a pandemic. You're not going to get anything other than your wonderful government services.
Oh,
sorry. The shutdown is probably the easier thing to avoid right now. All Democrats have to do is remove a provision that suspends the debt limit, and enough Republicans in the Senate will vote for the bill. So this continuing resolution that Schumer's talking about funding is for education, health, housing, and public safety programs through December. So, I mean, it does have a little bit for you in there. I mean, obviously, critical education funding. It does also cover SNAP benefits. And it also covers school lunch programs for needy children in the country, and then housing-related issues and public safety programs through December 3rd. So these are all – that's all in this during a pandemic. It's going to be interesting to see on the housing front, though, because we're literally almost at the deadline now for the federal moratorium on evictions. I haven't seen any mainstream media coverage on that. Have you? I haven't seen any talk of the eviction moratorium. That's the Biden extension. It's going to run out here in the next few days.
Didn't you get the memo, though, Clayton? The pandemic is over.
Oh, right. I forgot.
Yeah. No, it's all right. I'm here. That's why I'm here.
Sorry. I was out with COVID last week, so I didn't get the memo that the pandemic is over. God, this nose is itchy. I need like sandpaper. Can somebody give me some sandpaper? I feel like
that's your lingering. That's your COVID.
That's my long COVID.
Yeah.
You want to see my long COVID? I'll try that with my wife later. See if she goes for it. So that's where we are on the government shutdown piece of this. You know, so we've got about an hour to see if Schumer can pull a hat out of his rabbit. we'll see. And that's going to be the easier part. Okay, so that first piece is the easier part, is the government shutdown piece. The whole stimulus package we're going to get to next. So that's part of the government shutdown stimulus package. I didn't even make a separate graphic because it's all part of it. So we're going to get to the stimulus chunk next and what happens here. I don't have some favorable news for you, but we'll bring you up to date on that. But first, I do want to tell you how you can get some free money. Our friends over at Public One of my favorite places to go and trade stock, because it acts as like a social media platform, is Public. And you know, when you're just getting started learning to invest in the stock market, and you don't know what you're doing, you need some guidance. And so with Public, they've treated it like a social network, so you can follow along with some of your favorite investors. You can follow me over on Public, and when I make a trade, or if I invest in Apple, or I make some other kind of investment, then you can get a notification. And it's very, very clean. The app is gorgeous. And they have a fractional investing feature. So you don't have to buy a full share of Amazon or a full share of Apple. You can buy fractional. If you want to buy $5 of Apple stock, you can do that with Public. And it makes it easier for you to build a portfolio. And it really, I really love this social interaction piece of this from some high-level investors. It makes you feel like a really great community. And everyone over there is super, super positive, by the way. And you can get started for as little as $1. And you can even get a free slice of stock up to $50 when you join public.com. All you need to do is go to public.com/morning to download the app and sign up today right on your phone. So grab your phone, whether you got an Android phone or an iPhone, doesn't matter. Go to public.com/morning, download the app for as little as $1. You can start investing and you'll get a free slice of stock valued up to $50 when you join. That's free stock just for signing up. Valid for U.S. residents 18 and older, subject to account approval. See public.com/disclosures. This is not investment advice. I'm a big fan of Public. You're on Public, right?
Yes, sir.
Sure. Yeah, I've got some of my long-term portfolio of stocks over there. Because it's not like a day trading account. So when I make sort of a long-term investment, like in Beyond Meat or Apple or some of those companies, like I do it there because I'm going to hold it for many, many months or years. So I do it on Public. Lisa says, I got an Apple stock with Public. That's great. That's great. That's great. Tanda says, I have to leave in a few minutes to take my son to work. I hate leaving the show. Tanda, you can always come back and watch us later. We'll miss you, yeah. Tanda. We'll love having you here on the show. She's a long time viewer of the show. Mark Sparks says, you know what else sucks is Mansion and Cinema and Turtle Boy. They are rich, no good sons of guns, and they don't care for us at all. Yes. Patricia Crow is here. Good to see you. Tina Hines, you're not feeling well today, Tina? Tina Hines is sick, or you're just sick of our government? One of the others, you know. Tanda says, oh, $6.3 billion for Afghan refugees. Joe Stidham says, love you guys. Thank you so much, Joe. Joe Stidham says, man, chin, and cinnamon. All right, let's talk about the stimulus now. So stimulus really is, you know, I mean, I guess tied to all of this craziness right now with the government shutdown. But really, we need to kind of separate it as well, because what happens with this bipartisan infrastructure bill, it all comes down to today. We're supposed to have a vote on this today. The $1 trillion infrastructure bill, roads and bridges bill, you know, that whole thing, TSA bill, like the big dry hump for big Wall Street, right? Someone said, don't say wet kiss anymore. So we're just saying dry hump.
Yes.
The big dry hump for Wall Street. You know, no wonder all of these big corporations are so excited about it, because they get all of this money. They're super happy about it. And no wonder a lot of these corporate Democrats have been pushing to just pass this part of it. Just pass this part. Like Gottheimer out of New Jersey. I mean, he's been like leading the charge on this. These corporate Democrats who just want us to pass the roads and bridges bill because we can't wait, is what they're telling us. We can't wait. Now, look, I know America's crumbling, right? But I think we could wait a few more days to make sure that we can tie all of this together with the $3.5 trillion plan, don't you? Like, this bridge isn't going to collapse right this second, right? I mean, so
yeah,
what is the motivation?
It hasn't collapsed in like 10 years, so it's not going to collapse now.
So what do you think the motivation is for this Gottheimer, you know, New Jersey? I mean, of course, they want this money to go to these Wall Street, you know, donors. They want all this money to go to fossil fuel companies and otherwise. It's a joke. No wonder they're so ebullient about this infrastructure bill, because it's just a big pile of money for Wall Street and all of their corporate donors. Now, progressives, if you'll remember, yesterday we reported what Bernie Sanders was saying was hold firm. Do not allow this infrastructure bill to go through. Do not allow this to go through because we won't get what we want. If we let this go through, we are going to be screwed. You know, this is what Bernie Sanders said yesterday. I bring it back up here. I strongly urge my House colleagues to vote against the bipartisan infrastructure bill until Congress passes a strong reconciliation bill. So, where are we at today on the infrastructure bill? Well, Speaker Pelosi went to the White House yesterday with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer to talk to President Biden. The backdrop here is that the bipartisan infrastructure bill is in deep trouble. Deep trouble. There's no other way to put it. It's in peril. And it seems exceedingly unlikely that the House will be able to pass the infrastructure bill today due to widespread discontent on the left over how this whole process is going. So that's where we are right now. Progressives are winning right now. I mean, I'm excited about this as a progressive. Looks like they're holding the line. We were worried that they were going to cave, right? And it looks like progressives are holding the line right now. So you've got AOC and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren all saying, hey, we had a deal, remember? We had a deal a few months ago where we outlined the framework. We're not voting on this other piece of infrastructure until that $3.5 trillion plan is part of this. We want to make sure that climate is in there, child tax credits, all of those things are taken care of. We're not
minimum
voting
wage,
on
minimum Medicare wage, for all.
Medicare for all. Not in there, but nice try. I think I wasn't paying attention.
Come on, man.
Yeah, it's not in there. But at least some good things are in there. A lot of good things are in there. And so, you know, Bernie Sanders is right. And people are listening to him. He spent time on the phone calling people saying, do not vote on this. So, you know, we covered this at the time this deal was cut. It was a mistake for moderates to accept it because progressives were going to end up using it to their advantage. And guess what? Here we are. Progressives are using it to their advantage. In essence, progressives don't trust Senator Joe Manchin, and they don't trust Kyrsten Sinema. They don't think that, hey, if we go along with just passing this $1 trillion thing, you're going to come along and allow us to pass the gigantic $3.5 trillion social safety net program quickly. So they don't trust them. Why should they trust them? Manchin and Sinema are miles apart from progressives on a whole host of priorities. Manchin and Sinema are acting on their own timetable right now. They're not progressives, especially Manchin. I mean, I would say especially Sinema, you know, also, right? And they have completely different incentives than the left does right now. They're focused on helping fossil fuel companies. We reported yesterday on Kyrsten Sinema, you know, taking money from these big donors, taking money from pharmaceutical companies, right? I mean, she doesn't care about you. Do you think for a second she cares about you?
You don't buy her Coach bags and nice fancy things.
No, I don't. You know, and then Manchin reiterated his, for months, Sanders and Manchin, along with Sinema, have been at odds over the internal debate over the size of the prospective package. Sanders initially had floated a $6 trillion package. They got it down to 3.5. Manchin said yesterday he reiterated his opposition to spending what Sanders wants by releasing a statement saying, I can't support a $3.5 trillion more in spending when we already have spent $5.4 trillion since last March. At some point, all of us, regardless of party, must ask the simple question, how much is enough? Make no mistake about it, Manchin, Joe Manchin, if that is your real name. It's not about the price tag. It's about the tax provisions in this bill, which would increase taxes for businesses. That's it. That's the only reason you oppose this, because these big companies have funneled enough money to you, and they're telling you that we don't want this bill because we'll have to pay more in taxes. Bottom line, full stop, you don't give a rat's behind about how much this thing costs, because you have no problem voting before to funnel trillions of dollars to your Wall Street buddies. But now there's an infrastructure bill that actually would help your fellow West Virginians and other Americans, and now you're concerned about the price tag. BS. BS.
Like, this man does not talk to his constituents. I mean, he's in one of the hardest hit states during this whole thing. He doesn't care about them.
No. One of the poorest states in the country. You know, an area I used to live in. I love West Virginia. I love the people of West Virginia.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful state. And they are routinely screwed by Washington and their politicians. Who continue? The only reason they get elected is because they take money from these big coal companies and fossil fuel companies and energy companies and other things. That's how they make it. That's how they make it.
I think it was 90% of renters in that area were not able to pay their rent at some point during the pandemic. 90%.
Yeah, Joe, your people of West Virginia are doing great. Yeah. So you're really concerned about the overall cost. And the impact on inflation. You're really concerned about that. Not the $120 billion a month that the Fed funnels to Wall Street. You don't care about that, but suddenly now you care about it as it's going to help people in your state. So progressives have even more to think about, and they've solidified their opposition to this infrastructure bill. Good for them. So at this hour, it looks like progressives are drawing a line in the sand. And make no mistake about it, this $1 trillion package is, again, a big handout to Wall Street. And again, as one senator pointed out, his electric bus program had to be shifted so that a huge portion of the money that was set aside in this infrastructure bill would go to fossil fuel buses. Like, the whole point was that it was an electric bus program for electric buses. And these Republicans managed to get in there that it needed to be gas-guzzling buses as well. Because, God, we just can't have anything clean. We got to have it half dirty, you know? That's what this bill is, you know? That's what this infrastructure bill is. And meanwhile, we have people like Kyrsten Sinema who could face a primary, according to data this morning, or according to reporting this morning. Kyrsten Sinema could be, finally, a group of Arizona Democrats backed by a network of deep-pocketed donors is laying the groundwork for a primary challenge to Sinema. Sinema, a moderate Democrat, stop calling her a moderate, she's a conservative, who is up for re-election in 2024, is at the center of a standoff right now.
Quit calling her a Democrat.
Right. Yeah. The new primary Sinema PAC does not plan to support a particular primary challenger. Instead, it's going to fund local groups to pressure Sinema and help build the support and infrastructure for an eventual candidate, they say. Sinema has proven time and time again, they say, that she doesn't care. She doesn't share these values. So it's time to organize and replace her with someone that does. Climate change, voting rights, immigration reform, other issues. They are disappointed that she's not done more on those issues. We'll see. We'll see if that happens. We'll see. Who knows what's going to happen with Joe Manchin. I mean, he may even not run for re-election. So at this point, who knows who's going to step in his stead. But that's where we stand at this hour. Right now, we'll see if Manchin's argument holds strong that we're not going to spend any money. We're not going to expand the amount of money we spend on this $3.5 trillion. That's too much. Democrats are saying, fine, you won't do that. Then we're not voting. Progressives are saying, we're not going to vote for the $1 trillion plan. And we'll see what happens later this afternoon. But today, that vote's supposed to happen. So I'm telling you what, folks, if that vote doesn't happen today, progressives have won round one of this battle, which is fantastic. That means that they grew a pair, they finally got together and organized, stood strong, and they didn't bow to pressure. So we'll see. We'll bring you that story first thing in the morning tomorrow. We'll see how things all shake out on this regard.
Pear is actually my favorite fruit.
Pears are?
Mm-hmm. So if they grow a pear, I wouldn't mind having it.
I don't think you want to eat the pears. They're grown right now.
Oh, okay.
You sick son. Yeah. So we've got more news to get to here on the show. Let's get to, we're going to talk about prescription drugs. So in the chat below, I want you to put in your thoughts. Which country do you think spends more on prescription drugs than any other country in the world? Get your vote in now. Nikki Jones likes mango.
I'm not a fan of mango. I just can't get into it. It's too
pineapple,
slimy.
Pineapple is probably my favorite fruit.
Oh, God, I love pineapple.
But not on
pizza. Especially on pizza.
Not on Peter. That's not.
I just don't think you've had the right combo.
I think I had it in Hawaii.
Yeah, I don't think that counts because they use ham. You got to have it with mine with bacon because bacon is so salty that contrast of salt and sweet. I don't know, man. Let me make you one once.
All right, I'll try it. I just think I would rather have, if you're going to make me like a crispy bacon pizza, I don't want a fruit on there. Like, I don't want a wet fruit on top of my cheese and crispy bacon.
Oh, no. It wouldn't be like that. You just got to trust me. And then if I make you a pizza and you don't like it, then I'll concede.
Now, I may say, hey, that's actually pretty tasty, but that's not pizza. Like, okay. I might still concede that it's like, okay, it's a tasty, this is like a flatbread with some stuff on it. It's like, you know.
I would take that.
It's like when you go to California Pizza Kitchen, like, that's not real pizza, right? That's like, let's be honest, right? I'm from the East Coast. I'm from Philly. Like, I know what a real, like, delicious pizza tastes like. And that stuff at California Pizza Kitchen is not pizza.
Yeah.
It's something. It can be tasty. It's not a pizza. I know what it is, but it's not a pizza. Yes. Teresa says, okay, Clayton. Exactly. I don't know what that means, but I'm with you. Jalapenos. Now, that would be good on there, too, David Foley says. Okay. Good, good, good. I want to tell you about our friends at Truebill. I don't know if you know this, but do you know how much? I don't know if you, probably you don't, but most Americans have literally, they spend close to $200 a month in subscriptions. Most Americans think they only spend like $80 a month on stuff until they start using Truebill, and Truebill actually shows them how much money they're wasting on all kinds of different subscriptions. You signed up for Truebill, right?
Yes, sir. Yep. And it actually like tells me when I have big like transactions, whatever, that it like notifies me of things, and I go check it. Like, it got me to cancel a couple subscriptions that I had that I forgot I had had. So yeah, it just kind of monitors my finances, and I like it. I didn't like when it got rid of my subscriptions that I had, like, I actually was able to cancel them through Truebill. Like, I didn't have to go seek these things down. It's like, yes, please cancel this for me. And they did it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all handled right there. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need or you don't want or you simply forgot about. On average, people are saving thousands a year with Truebill. You can see all of your subscriptions in one place. Keeps the ones you want, cancels the ones you don't right from the app. Like Matthew B., who wrote us, and said, who says, in a matter of seconds, I saved $660 for the year on my DirecTV bill. I saved $120 for the year on my Sirius XM bill, saved $840 a year on a car insurance bill. All because of Truebill. Start canceling your unused subscriptions. Just go to truebill.com/investing. Use that URL so they know that you came from us. Because, you know, hey, they support the show. They support independent journalism and what we're doing here on this show. So right now, go to truebill.com/investing. It could save you thousands of dollars a year. Truebill.com/investing. Our thanks to Truebill for supporting the show.
Thanks, Truebill.
I appreciate them. Thank you, Truebill. Thanks for saving David some money there.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about prescription drugs this morning. If I asked you before the break, can you name the industrialized country which spends more on prescription drugs than any country in the world? Many of you got that the answer correct. If you answered the United States of America, you, my friends, get some pineapple-covered pizza, which is not really pizza, but David assures me it does taste good. So new report out this morning from the U.S., the U.S. is the drug industry's gold mine. Gold mine. Look at all of these costs of drugs here on your screen here. So Americans are paying pharmaceutical companies more for the world's 20 blockbuster drugs than the rest of the world combined, according to an analysis of company filings by Public Citizen. So just look at some of the drugs where we pay, like compared to the international, okay? Humira. I don't even know what Humira is. Does anyone in our chat, anyone know what Humira is? I see television commercials for it all the time.
Yeah, I do too. And I thought it was like depression or something. I'm going to look.
Humira, $16 billion in the United States. Look at international. I'm talking the entire rest of the world.
Arthritis.
Billion. Arthritis. Okay. Yeah. By the way, arthritis is an inflammation. Do you know how you get inflammation? Eating crappy food.
Eating crap, yep.
That's why we have inflammation. That's why we have such an arthritis epidemic in the United States. Can you imagine if we would actually have a healthy food supply in the United States?
I had a really good friend.
Crinkled up fingers and like my mom. She's pretty healthy now, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know what she's eating. But she did have like, she had like, you know, she has arthritis in one of her fingers and it like bends over.
I had a friend who is a cancer colon surgeon, and this guy told me that 99% of diseases are between here. And I got my hand down around my waist, between here and here. So basically in your gut is where all of this stuff starts. Inflammation, almost any disease we deal with in this country, it's all in your gut. And he's like, that's why it's so important that you eat well. And we don't have anything. Like, if you want to mandate something, they should mandate healthy food. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's like they don't care about that because it's good money to keep us sick.
Right. You're never going to see a broccoli commercial, right? Where's the
sugar,
broccoli?
You see sugar.
You see sugar. You see the corn syrup lobby is strong, right? The mm-hmm. fact that we have the fact that ketchup in the United States has been classified as a vegetable because of the corn syrup lobby. Yeah. So that we can, like, that's America. Can we demand better? I mean, this country, what in the hell is happening there? Like, and so, yes, all this inflammation that we have in the United States comes from food, right? Comes from our crappy food supply that's run by all of these, you know, filled with all kinds of chemicals and preservatives and everything else. Because all of these big companies, you know, like the corn syrup lobby and others, you know, send so much money to Congress. That's how it happens. And then how do we fight it? With drugs, prescription drugs, and then we pay through the nose for these prescription drugs. So Humira, anti-inflammation, anti... by the way, it's kind of amazing when you see people transform their lives. When they stop eating that kind of food, like the arthritis starts going away within weeks. It's kind of amazing. But we still need to eat those like processed cheese balls from Walmart, so we don't... That's why we continue to have all this terrible arthritis. Anyway, Humira, $16 billion compared with the rest of the world. Its revenue for the United States is 81%. Look at that. U.S. revenue as a share of the total. So no wonder. This is a gold mine for Humira, the company.
And are these U.S.-based companies as well, just out of curiosity?
I think most of them. I'm not quite sure. I'd have to look at all of the separate filings. I think most of them are. Keytruda. I don't know what Keytruda is. $8 billion in the United States. I haven't even heard of some of this stuff. Some of the stuff I see television commercials for. That should even tell you more about this problem we have in the United States, that they have television commercials to tell you to go and recommend this to your doctor. Ask your doctor about Eliquis. Are you having trouble peeing? Tell your doctor today. Do you have restless leg syndrome? Tell your doctor today. Like, I remember when restless leg syndrome suddenly was a thing. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I got in trouble, actually. I was on the air in Philadelphia. And I just remember, I was like kind of joking about it. I'm like, this is America. And I know, because I'm sure there were people that were watching. They're like, Clayton, I had restless leg syndrome. I'm so glad they finally labeled it something and created a drug for it. Like, okay, you got me. But I remember when it wasn't even a thing, and then they just like suddenly this company decides they inadvertently figured out that this drug helped like prickly leg syndrome, but they were trying to make a drug for something else. So they like inadvertently discovered that this drug like helped with restless leg syndrome. And so they started marketing that. But I remember on the air in Philadelphia saying, isn't it kind of ridiculous that this suddenly just pops up one day? Like now there's this thing called restless leg syndrome. Like, okay, it's now it's a thing and we got to have drugs to cover it, right? I got some emails who are like, I have restless leg syndrome. It's like, okay, I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do.
Is it restless right now or are you sitting down? Like,
right. Hey, here's how you fix your restless leg syndrome. Go for a walk. Stop eating crappy food. I'm going to get more hate mail, but that's
you know what I hate? I hate when my leg falls asleep during the day, because then I know it's going to be up all night.
That happens with my third leg, if you know what I mean. Stretching helps a lot, Lisa says, yes. Eat bananas.
Yes.
Wicked bananas. Insanity says, my hips are arthritic too. Still no doctor, though. Still no drugs? Still no drugs, though. See, there we go. Katie Will Go says, I have restless leg syndrome. It's a real thing. I hope you never have it. Another one. Elizabeth says, I have restless leg. It's awful. All right. See, I knew it.
You know what I have? I have restless brain syndrome. Like when I lay down to go to sleep, my brain is just like.
Yeah. Look, I'm sure it exists. All I'm saying is like, I'm not discounting it. All I was saying was, I remember when it didn't exist. And then suddenly one day, because of a drug company, it now exists. That's my point. Not that you have it, and I'm sure it's painful and it's annoying. And look, I actually have some bad circulation issues in my legs as well. I had a dislocated knee a number of years ago. I had to have surgery on some veins in my knee. So I get it. I get some pains in the side of my leg. So I understand. I'm not making fun or anything like that. What I am making fun of is the drug companies and how suddenly out of the blue, there's all this marketing around this new thing that no one even was talking about a week ago. You know what I mean? Like, do you have restless thumb syndrome where your thumb is constantly doing this? Yeah, you know, I'm constantly doing that to people. Maybe I need a drug for this. Clayton is always so cheerful. He's always giving people the thumbs up. No, it's a syndrome.
Yeah,
it's
all you need is
fun syndrome.
A good muscle relaxant, and that thing's going to just lay right down.
Yeah. Oh. Thanks to Eliquis, my thumb doesn't stand up anymore. Thanks, Eliquis.
Neither do I.
You consult your doctor. It may cause internal bleeding. May cause even death. I love that as part of the descriptions, though. In rare cases, it'll cause death. Okay. Sign me up for that. Anyway, my point is the prescription drug companies, okay? And so look at this crap. Eliquis, $8 billion compared to $6 billion. Imbruvica, $6 billion.
And this is gross or this profit?
These are profits. Yeah. These are profits. Net profits.
Jeez.
Americans are paying pharmaceutical companies more for the world's 20 blockbuster drugs than the rest of the world combined. Why it matters... The U.S. pharmaceutical industry's goldmine in the analysis shows just how much the industry has at stake as it fights the Democrats' plan to allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices and let employers piggyback off of those new lower drug prices. That's right. The U.S. alone represented 64% of that total, $1.1 billion in revenue.
No, $101
billion. Oh, sorry, $101 billion, yeah.
I'd be curious to know what, like, if you go to the top drug up there, the one that did the most, like, what the CEO of that company makes per year.
Let's see if you can find that. Humira.
Humira.
I don't know what company that is off the top of my head.
Adalimumab, something like that. But let me go and see here if I can find.
John Venturini. That is funny. Very funny. Says the Fonz had restless thumb syndrome. Hey. I have to give you props for that one.
Yeah.
Hey.
That's good.
Teresa Monroe says, Dana Carvey has a great stand-up special about 10 Ultra, which is not a real drug. It's on Netflix. I love Dana Carvey. Restless stupid people syndrome, Belinda says. Kate Wilgo says, I love drugs. Hippie Soul says, I did step aerobics for years. Maybe that's why I got arthritis in my hips. Could be. I know women who do a lot of running as women's hips, like women are more prone to having like arthritic hip issues from having from running and stuff. So,
it looks like I'm finding here that Abby V. Hands, the CEO, made $21 million and a hefty bonus. Even as executive pay scrutiny mounts. So $21 million and got bonuses of 20. So Gonzalez pocketed $21.27 million in 2018. Nearly 20% of that, or $3.9 million, came from a performance-based cash incentive award. And 3.9 million was smaller than the 4.3 million Gonzalez snared for 2017, but it's still 58% more than his target award, which itself is 1.5 times his base salary.
Jeez. Grimm says, don't forget Cosmo Kramer had to deal with a restless leg syndrome situation. It's true. Kramer. This is an amazing piece of this, right? Between the lines, Americans don't consume more drugs than other countries. It simply boils down to higher prices. So we're not like Americans aren't taking more drugs than the rest of the world. We're just paying like 10 times more for those drugs. FYI. And well, that's why Kyrsten Sinema can, make money from these big drug companies because she doesn't want them to have to pay less or lose any of this revenue.
Well, and understand that it's the whole medical industry, like from drugs all the way to care and everything, because like I was looking into, and I'm not going to get the exact prices, but like a bag of saline. So when you go into the hospital, sometimes you get a bag of saline to hydrate you or whatever. Those bags of saline in other countries are like $8 or something like that. They're like $800 to $1,000 in the United States. So our whole entire system is completely messed up with the prices that we pay for everything. And it's like, if you go in and you say you're a cash patient, sometimes you actually can negotiate those prices down. But if you're on insurance, they charge the max because they're in bed with each other. The hospitals know that they're going to make a bunch of money off the insurance companies, and they can charge these outrageous prices for this stuff. So from drugs to everything, this whole medical system that we're in is completely a sham.
Yeah. And right now, we should be clear, Medicare is prohibited from setting drug prices. They can't do it. And employers have no leverage right now in lowering commercial prices. Like, this is America. It's just highway robbery. America spends more on hospital and physician care than drugs. But drug companies often have the highest profit margins. And you don't want to lose this money. Many companies profit off of the flow of drugs, but pharmaceutical companies retain a vast majority of the money. And so under these provisions, under what Bernie Sanders wants to accomplish and allowing Medicare to like negotiate lower prescription drugs, it's still a hackneyed process. Like what other countries have to deal with is way easier, way better. Medicare is still private companies. And so now it would give them this bulk prescription drug pricing negotiation power. And Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, they don't want to allow that happen. They say it's capitalism. And you see these other Republicans that are like, no, this is America. It's capitalism. These companies should be allowed to just basically charge people as much money as possible for drugs. Okay. Like that's literally their argument, that we are a capitalist society.
And that's been my argument for against minimum wage. Like I don't think that we should have a minimum wage in this country, but I do believe that we should have a company like that should be able to say you can claim 25% profit or something like that. Like it has to be tied to a percentage that would stop them from being so focused on profit, because they are solely focused on profit. Everything else be damned. People be damned. Like they don't care about the well-being of people. They sit there and they make these drugs, but it's so that they can get the patents fast and first so that they make the most money. That's all they care about. So you have to find a way to take away that incentive. And that would be by limiting their profits to a certain percentage that they can take. And then the rest either has to go to the workers or go back into something. But like you have to set these maxes or these limits. Otherwise, this is never going to get fixed.
They'll argue, of course, you hear the arguments from Republicans. Well, we would never have this research and development if they weren't allowed to make this kind of money.
Right. You have citizens doing this kind of research and stuff, like volunteering. Like,
right.
It would still get done. Of course. Yeah.
Like, you mean to tell me instead of making $100 billion, you'd only make $60 billion? Really? And then you would just throw in the towel. You'd be like, there's just not enough money in it for us. Like $60 billion. Okay.
And think about this. Think about if you had a certain amount of profits and then you could put money back into actually figuring out so we're making these profits. We could make a little bit more if we did work and found out what actually does help people. Like if you actually wanted to help people, you could put so much money into research and development on what really will help. It's like with the current stuff, like if more research was done on that, And how it could actually, I hate that I can't even say words. I'm in my head like, okay, don't say this word. But the bottom line is, if they cared more about people and actually didn't have to worry about the bottom line, we would see a completely different situation.
Yeah, you can't say certain words anymore because YouTube.
I know.
YouTube will just knock you down, man. Don't even try it. Don't even do it.
Nope. That's a shame.
Can't even do it.
Can't even say medical terms.
You know, the story that I brought you multiple times here on the show is about how all these companies, they've been taking money from the federal government. And ideally, the argument from the Fed, Jerome Powell and others, is that we provide the liquidity for these companies so that they can put this money towards research and development, right? And it gives back. It gives back to society because they're building products, they're building prescription drugs, they're helping, but they're not. What they're doing is they're buying their own stocks back, right? Well,
and
they're
giving think about this.
Big corporate bailouts or big golden parachutes for their CEOs.
And think about this. The American people, our tax dollars during a pandemic when we weren't getting anything, our money helped fund the research. Our money helped fund the development. And then guess who gets to take advantage of the patent that they got out of us helping them get it? And then now the government is paying for these for them, for us. And so they've made money, taken our money three times out of this whole equation. And, you know, like, and then, and now we're going to have to start paying for it.
Yeah, I'm sure they sent you money though, right? I mean,
no, not a dime.
Yeah. So you paid them three times. You've paid them three times, basically. So for their research and development on the drugs, for the tax breaks and tax incentives, and for then now for the intellectual property as well.
So, right, and so they make these billions that you just showed. They're making these billions off of this pandemic that we helped them. Like, they didn't even have to spend any of those billions for the research and development. They didn't have to spend those billions on anything other than their shareholders. That was right. Free and clear money.
And if you read the contract, which I have, it's an amazing contract, the Pfizer contract with the U.S. government. It's amazing because it basically, or so the Moderna, whatever, I forget which one I read, but they're the exact same, by the way, but it got leaked. And so you realize, holy crap, the U.S. government gave away the farm in this contract. Like, if you were going into business with somebody, like if I was going into business with you and you and I were going to build something together and we came up with a contract, it would be much more equitable, like 50-50, right? No. The U.S. contract from the U.S. government basically got shafted. They get zero out of the deal, and the big drug company got like 100%. Literally, even the contract was like, hey, we will take all of your money, and it's possible we will never make any kind of a drug, but you have no recourse. We will take all of your money. That's what the contract said.
Right, and when you say that the government made zero, that means us. We made zero. And we didn't get to have an attorney look over that contract to see if it was in our best interest. We can't say, well, you know what? We'll let you do that, but let me take it to our attorney, to the people's attorney. There's nobody representing us. So they can just give our money away. And they don't care that it's like the Federal Reserve. They're loaning our money out at 0% interest to these people, maybe we'll get it back, maybe we won't or whatever. But it's like there's nobody representing us to make the decisions to say that's a bad contract. We don't get anything out of this. We're giving it's literally like all of us are sitting there at a table and we're like, OK, we're going to give you all this money for research and development because there's a pandemic. But you know what? When you get the profits, a percentage of it has to come back to the people.
Yeah. Oh, but you mean you don't have a government lawyer that they've provided to you?
No, none of us do. Oh, but wait a minute. What was that where Biden was like, they can just get a lawyer? Was that for evictions?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like we all just have lawyers sitting around.
Yeah. You could just hire a lawyer for $5,000 for a retainer because everyone has that just in their back pocket. They can just hire a lawyer like that.
But they sit here and they negotiate with our money all the time with these drug companies, with all these people that are making billions in profits. But we never have our own attorney at the table. Like the Congress is supposed to be our attorney, but they don't do anything for us.
Nothing makes sense.
Exactly, Judge. You're the only one that's been speaking honestly around here, Judge.
You calling me a liar?
Oh, man. So that's the prescription drug story. Unbelievable. Let's talk about Kristi Noem. My favorite story of the week. You'll recall yesterday I brought you the story about Kristi Noem, the good governor of South Dakota. She's a nonpartisan hack. She doesn't let politics get in the way, right? She's always out in front for the people of South Dakota. instead of her political ambitions.
Can I say anyway, something real quick about her? Like, she would have made a great character in Interview with a Vampire with no makeup. Like, those eyes are piercing.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's been reported. I hesitated to talk about this, but you know Corey Lewandowski?
Mm-hmm.
Corey Lewandowski is, according to a right-wing blog this morning, apparently he's been seen with her, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
And they're both married, apparently. And according to this right-wing blog, they've been chummy, quite chummy lately. And now, also separately, Politico is reporting about Corey Lewandowski this morning, actually, that he's been pushed out of the Trump camp for making unwanted sexual advances against against one of his former, executives or people that works within one of the former donors, big donor, is accusing Corey Lewandowski.
If you went to that website and you saw that and he's standing next to Trump, it's like, you know, that's a quick, like, hey, he's making sexual advances on Trump. Wow.
Yeah. Now, and they did mention, they didn't go into details about this whole thing, but Lewandowski, because he's been working on, he's been making, like, getting chummy with Kristi Noem. And he's been apparently getting her in Trump's good graces, and there's possibility that if Trump runs in 2024, he would pick her as his running mate. Those are the rumors. Kristi Noem could be Trump's running mate in 2024. And according to rumors, they've been kind of chummy.
Well, maybe Corey just has family members that want to be real estate. What is it that they do?
Real estate appraisers?
Yeah, maybe he just knows some people and he's like, oh, she can get his job.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Kristi Noem up there in South Dakota. She is she's under fire because her daughter, 26 years old, failed her real estate appraiser exam, didn't get her real estate appraisal license, okay? And then she calls a meeting, brings the state agency in, who's head of giving out these licenses, and brings her daughter in, brings a whole bunch of other people into her office, and basically reams them out. It's like, hey, my daughter didn't get her license. Because she's stupid. She couldn't pass a real estate appraiser's exam or license. She didn't get it. So can you give it to her anyway? Like, is that not an abusive office? So anyway, then suddenly, magically, her daughter gets her real estate appraiser's license in South Dakota. Well, the update this morning is that now she's under investigation. So I wanted to bring you this update. Apparently, her alleged nepotism may be probed by the attorney general that she hates. So the attorney general, you recall, was also involved in a hit-and-run accident where he fled the scene, killed somebody, and then later just got a slap on the wrist with some fines. Like, let me ask you this. Anybody watching right now, if you were involved in a hit-and-run, you hit somebody with a car, and then you killed that person, and then you fled the scene, what do you think would happen to you? Answer me in the chat below. What do you think would happen to you? I can tell you what would probably happen to me.
Yeah, same.
Probably be arrested.
It's kind of like that meme I posted yesterday on Morning Invest, the one that says, if you lie to the government, it's a felony. If the government lies to you, it's politics.
Right, yeah. Drew De Olivia says, I'd be in prison. Arlene Morrow says, I'd be in jail. Lisa Pettit, jail time. Francis Bragg says, we'd all go to jail. Yep, jail, 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 prison. Jail for life, hippie soul says. I'd be arrested. Nope, not if you're in South Dakota and you're the attorney general. You just get a fine. Anyway, now this same attorney general is investigating the governor for allegedly using her office, abusing her office to get her daughter a real estate appraiser's license after she was first denied one. In Sioux Falls, South Dakota, less than a day after the AP reported this whole story, I've been contacted by several concerned citizens and legislatures, Attorney General Jason Ravensborg said. I'm actively reviewing their concerns, and I will be following the steps prescribed in codified law in relation to those questions. Democratic state lawmakers had raised concerns that Noem had improperly pressured the head of the state's appraiser program, Sherry Brin, to provide her daughter a license after she was denied one. Brin was then forced out of her job a week later and was given a $200,000 settlement as a gag, as basically as gag money. So now we'll see, you know, if he's going to, what he's going to do to this. I love that he basically claimed that he thought he hit a deer. He's like, I thought it was a deer.
It was a deer old lady. He's
it was just a deer. Can you fault me?
Jeez.
Mark Sparks says, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So Kristi Noem, we'll see what happens there. She thinks, though, it's a witch hunt. Well, now her attorney general, I don't know why they don't like each other. I'm not sure why they don't like each other. That's one thing I don't know about it. This piece doesn't specifically talk about it, like why they're not fans of each other, but I don't know. I'm not sure. The governor raised eyebrows when she commissioned a personal office desk that was equipped with a gun holder made by prison labor, one she reportedly received a hefty discount for. So this is not the first time that she's had some questions. You know, she has the office desk that has a gun built into it that she had her own labor, her own prison labor in South Dakota make it for her. And she got a big discount for it.
Did she learn also, that from Kamala Harris?
Maybe, yeah. Noem also deployed his National Guard unit to Mexico border this summer using funds from a private donation. So she's got some, you know, this is the thing, you know, when you've got a whole Republican legislature, who's going to really investigate this? The only good thing here is that at least the attorney general is not fans. They're not fans of each other. He knows that Noem has called on him to resign over the whole hit and run incident. So they're bad blood there. But beyond that,
What's crazy too is these people don't even have to worry about journalists anymore. It's like you get caught, but like there's no journalists like down their throat. Like no, like CNN isn't there. Like, you know, investigating what really happened. They're probably going to be questioning and talking about it. But there's no investigative journalists out there like following these paper trails and seeing just how corrupt these people are. Because if they're doing this one thing, I guarantee you they've been doing this their whole career.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is that we know what's happened to independent journalism. It's all but dried up. I mean, I don't know do you have some really good independent investigative journalists in South Dakota?
Doesn't sound like it.
Probably not. Look, I'm not crapping on South Dakota, but I will tell you, I lived in Montana. And if you want to kind of compare a little bit here, just like the money that people would get paid at like a local newspaper. I remember when I worked in Helena, Montana, and I covered the governor's office and I worked for CBS News and I made $23,000 a year covering the governor. And I was like fresh out of college. You know, that's who gets hired for those positions. And the local newspaper, I forget it was called like the Independent. I forget what the Helena newspaper is. If anyone's from Helena, Montana, let me know in the chat. But it was called like the Independent or something like that. And it was like very thin. You know, it was not a newspaper that had like a lot of reporting. And most of the articles, if you looked at the bylines, you could see that they were just reprinted Associated Press articles. Like they weren't original reporting. There was like one or two articles from the local reporter newsroom that was covering Helena. It was like one article about the government and like one crime related story or something. That was it. You know, they
did
not have
the Independent Record.
Yes. The Independent Record. That's right. The Independent Record. And it was real thin paper, but most of it was just reprinted from national newspapers. There'd be an article. You could see the byline, Wall Street Journal, or Associated Press. I'm sure if you guys live in a small town, you're watching right now, pick up your local newspaper and see how many articles are written originally by that particular paper. Most of them are going to be just reprints. Like even my parents' paper in Reading, Pennsylvania, called the Reading Eagle. I would go home and visit. And most of the articles were written or repurposed from like the Associated Press or, I don't know, New York Times or something like that, or USA Today or Gannett newspapers. They would just repurpose those things, you know.
Well, and think about it. It all boils down to the money, because these local newspapers are like dying breed, right? So any advertising that they can get, they got to hold on to. And if those advertisers don't want these stories, like if it's an advertiser that's some kind of big business, it's like, hey, we can't push the governor. She gives us tax incentives. So, you know, there's this whole world going on. I remember, I think it was the show 2020. There was a group of people that were going to do this story on milk. I believe it was on raw milk. And they did all their research and they had all of this data and everything. And then the TV channel's like, yeah, you're not going to air this because it goes after this industry, the milk industry or something like that. And so they had to pull the story. And so it's like, this was important information that they wanted to get out to people, because it was like, we're putting this stuff in our bodies, and they had done all this research. And so it's like, that's what it boils down to, is if you are going against the establishment, you're not going to get that word out.
No, I remember when I worked at an NBC affiliate in West Virginia, in Bluefield, West Virginia. We were going to, it was like May sweeps time, and we were doing a story. Apparently this, I think the owner of the big car dealership in Bluefield, I don't know the name, and I don't recall the full story, but the owner of this, I think he had multiple car dealerships. So he was probably one of the biggest names in town. You know, they always name it after themselves, like Blaine's Ford.
Dick Hanna.
They always name it after themselves, you know. So that was this guy. And apparently there was some legal issue. He got in some trouble and there was something. And we were going to cover it on the news, on our show. But because they were such a big money provider to the station, you know, they would do their local ads all the time. That was probably their biggest money maker. You know, come down to Dick Hanna's Ford. You know, we've got the whole lineup of fall vehicles. Da, 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 da. You know those. That's the biggest money maker for that station. So our general manager came into the newsroom and was like, we're not doing that story. We're not doing it. Why? Money. So yep. we couldn't cover ads. The story. They'll pull their ads. Like, he was threatened by it. You know, he knew better to do it. I mean, that's how it works. Just how it works, you know? Someone said here in the chat rooms, like, or in this, it was like, you know, what newspaper, what local paper? They've all dried up. Yeah, you're right.
Well, and the thing is, like, the people that have the power, there are some people that push back on that. But for the most part, all these big news, like the mainstream media that you're watching, understand that you are getting what they are allowed to tell you. So mm-hmm. you're getting a very soft version. And that's why they have the softball questions to the senators and congresspeople, these presidential candidates. They never hit them hard because they'll lose all the ad dollars that those campaigns are putting into their, you know, to their 15 minutes of fame or whatever. And they lose all that. So you're never getting, except for every once in a while, they'll pull out one hard hitting story where they're like, okay, we'll let you cover this one because it's not really going to take anybody down per se. Mm-hmm. So it's sick.
It's rare.
Yeah,
it's rare.
It is rare.
Richard Blackstone in our chat says our local paper was bought by a corporate rag and it's terrible. Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of them just get bought up by these big, you know, Gannett newspapers. USA Today is awful. You know, they'll buy them up and then you'll notice all of these papers become homogenized. They're all the same. They're all the same, you know, and I only know
of one that's still doing a really good job, and that is the Morning Invest newsletter that you can get Bingo. Absolutely free.
Exactly. That's exactly right. We synthesize so many different sources and try to provide some context and make sense of things. If you go to morninginvest.com and subscribe, you can do that by just going to morninginvest.com/morninginvest.com. That's all you need to do. And just put in
no slash needed.
No slash needed. No slash needed. All right, so we'll be back. We're going to have an update on what's going on with the stimulus today, the big vote on infrastructure. So check out the channel. Make sure you have on bell notifications. I might publish a short video a little bit later today on that exact issue. So keep your eyes out for that, and I'll bring you updates as they come to me. Peace out, everyone. Hope you guys have a wonderful day.